What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. We've been gone for a while, but now we're here. We're actually going to do a five-part series on the five worst foods for you. And this is going to be part one. We're going to be talking about industrial seed oils, also known as just plain vegetable oils, and how truly horrible they are. So we're going to go do a deep dive into the science behind that. But first, Tom, how's everything been the past, maybe 4 weeks?
Yeah, it's been a while. So I ran that ultra marathon, I don't know, mid-April. I think the last podcast we did was the one right before I did that. It went pretty good. I definitely didn't pace myself like I should have.
And how long was this again?
32 miles.
Oh, so it's an ultra marathon.
Yes, with 1.3 miles in elevation. So that's 1.3 miles up, 1.3 miles down, which is crazy. It's like 6,700 feet. That's like climbing a 670-story building, like running that many stairs, and then running back down too.
Crazy.
My quads were dead. So I could barely... I don't know how people drive home from those events. Like, it's crazy.
Oh, you didn't?
Oh, my girlfriend did.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I needed her there. Like, not only, like, for the support, which really isn't that much support because she's just at the finish line. So it's like, oh, hey, you're here. Oh, no, I got to go do another lap. It's like, oh, okay, bye.
Was she there the whole time?
No, she left and came back.
Okay.
Yeah, it took me about 8 hours to do.
Man, that's a long run. Yeah. I didn't even think of that. So it's really going downhill that hurts your quads, right?
Yeah, because you have to, like, if you're going downhill, you have so much more momentum. So, like, your quads, like, contracting to stop you from falling down. And it's got all the weight of gravity along with it.
Over and over. Oh,
exactly.
Yeah.
And a lot of the track was, like, up and back. So that means, like, you're going the same course, like, there and back. Mm. So there was a large portion of it that I've had to walk. It was so steep uphill.
Jeez.
So, like, it was crazy how my splits were. So, like, each mile was a different time. I think my slowest mile was about 23 minutes. I had about 3 miles that were 20 minutes, which means I was walking the majority of those miles. Then I also had...
Were you aware that you were walking?
Oh, well, of course I know I'm walking.
But, I mean, were you aware that you were slow?
Yeah.
Okay. You're like, shit, this is slow.
This is just really hard. Okay. But my fastest mile was I want to say like 7 or 8. I need to check my phone. But I had a 7-minute mile in there.
Okay.
So there were...
That's a good clip.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty fast. Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, that far into it. I had about 4 or 5 miles that were under 10 minutes. And it was crazy. My second win came way later than I wanted it to. It came at mile 29. Like, my last 3 miles flew through it.
Easy.
Yeah, I think it was probably just a mental thing. Like, oh, hey, you're finally done with all the uphills. It's just, like, a little, like, decline, mostly just flat. And by this point, like, I've already ran this part of the trail 3 times, so I was, like, pretty familiar with it. There are a lot of parts where there's, like, trees that are falling over, like, a lot of mud, a lot of, like, tree roots and stuff. It was not the easiest course. So it was just, like, as soon as that, like, last 3 miles, something clicked, I just, like, sprinted back. I think I had one of those miles was, like, 9 minutes. So, like, it was crazy that, like, my top 5 or 6, like, fastest miles were, like, out of the last 3.
So I think what that shows is it's not really an endurance problem for you. It's just... getting used to this event. You had the gas in the tank.
Yeah, I think I definitely could have went farther. I mean, this is all... After I got through 26 miles, it was all, like, new terrain for me. I've never done anything like this. The course was brand new to me. I did 26... Like, I went from 16 miles to 21 miles to 26 miles, and that was my last training session, to 32 miles with a lot more trail and a lot more uphill than I was used to.
And a lot more people.
Yeah, that was another thing, is I started at the back because I was like, oh yeah, I gotta make sure I pace myself, because I was starting with a lot of people that were only doing either a half marathon or I think it was like a, I'm trying to think, it was like 18 miles, and then there was like a 26 mile course too, like a normal marathon. So I was running with a lot of those people. So there was probably 300 people at the start.
And you assume people running like the half marathon would run at a faster pace than you.
Definitely.
So you're like, let me just sit in the back.
Yeah, and this was the craziest part, is that you do two laps of a 13 mile loop. So it's kind of funny. It's like everybody's like really bunched together. And there's a lot of people like, hey, we're almost set, we're almost set. I'm like, no, I'm not. Not even halfway yet.
Yeah.
And then that second loop was so lonely. Like, I went surrounded by people for, like, the first loop. The next loop, I saw, like, me and one guy, like, went back and forth passing each other. Yeah. Like, that was about it. Like, I didn't see anybody else. I'd go, like, 30 minutes, or not 30 minutes, but probably, like, a good 7 minutes without seeing anybody. I was like, am I in the right place? Like, what's going on?
I love that. I love that. That's what separates us from them. You're not doing that half marathon. You're doing them ultra.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It's really weird. It's like you're out there. Like, my knees were hurting after a mile, like, five, just because of, like, how steep that incline was and everything. And so I'm, like, crying on the inside. Like, everything hurts. And then you pass by somebody, and you're just like, hey, good job, man. Like, you have a smile on your face.
Keep it up.
And then, like, as soon as you pass and they can't see you, you're back to, like, why am I out here doing this?
I know. Well, you think next time for your training, I mean, obviously you'll be more prepared, but you'll try and do training on a set trail similar to what your race will be on?
So I'm looking into trying to find another one to do sometime in either June or July. My May is just stacked with stuff. Got weddings. And another thing is, like, my girlfriend has a very, like, very crazy schedule for May. And I need somebody to drive me home from this. Like, I couldn't walk normal until Friday.
Just super sore. Were you cramping?
I did not cramp. Nice. That was one good thing. I took, I was taking salt pills every couple miles or so.
Okay.
And they provide, like, water, and they have, like, an electrolyte drink.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't even know the difference. I thought I was drinking water the whole time, or trying to. Because that electrolyte drink I got from the beginning, it was just so sugary, so sweet. And it was clear. Like, why couldn't they make one red and
blue?
One...
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, so I could tell the difference.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that probably helped out a little bit too, but yeah, I was taking salt pills all throughout.
Nice.
I made sure I take a lot of salt beforehand. I didn't do any magnesium. I didn't want to run the risk.
I get it. Yeah. And, like, salt should do the job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's a little bit of magnesium in that salt.
There is.
And so one thing I just bought, cause I'm going to do another one of these, is about 100 empty capsules so I can make my own salt pills at home.
There you go. Nice. See, you're getting better. By the time you're through with this, I bet your time's going to be cut in half.
I'm hoping.
I really think so.
Yeah, so I'm looking at either doing a 50 or 60 mile or next.
And hold on, so you finished in what time?
It took me 8 hours.
And what was the fastest time? Who won that shit?
Fastest was, I want to say, about 5 hours.
So that's crazy.
Yeah.
So you have, like, room to improve. Like, you have
definitely
a goal. That's cool.
And I think if I had somebody to run with, I think I probably should have finished in, like, 7 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had too much left in the tank. If three of my top 6 miles were the last 3 miles, I had too much left in the tank. Like, I sprinted through the finish.
Yeah. Is there any way to track mile per mile how fast you're going?
So,
like, do they tell you?
So I have an app on my phone. So that's why I was able to tell, like, how fast I ran each mile.
Okay.
Is it tells me.
So they don't tell you?
No. So there's an app that's like, hey, you just ran. You've been running for 1 hour. You've done 6 miles. Your pace for so far is 10 miles. Your last mile you did in eight minutes.
Got it. Okay.
So it kind of gives you a breakdown like that. So that's what I was using. That's how I knew, like, oh, hey, I did a 25-minute mile. Then I also did, like, a 7-minute mile.
Yeah. So if you can average, like, a 15-minute mile, your time would be greatly reduced.
Well, that's what I averaged, was 15 minutes.
Oh, really?
32 miles, 8 hours.
So now we just need to get down to, like, 13-minute miles.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
so the course that I've been running, like, to train for, I was doing it a 12-minute mile.
Okay.
But the course that I was doing was a lot harder than the one I was, like, training on. So I'm going to go to a different spot that's a lot more, it's a lot tougher. Uh-huh. It's going to have a lot more trails. That way I'm used to, oh, hey, there's a rock there. I got to avoid that. Here's a tree branch here. the course that I was training on was just too easy.
So the 26 miles you did on your training course, that was a 12-minute mile average.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have that in the tank.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
And without the hill, because the hill mile would take me like 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then like the other, I was doing like a loop. Mm-hmm. So it was like a 2-mile loop. The flat part was like a 10-minute mile.
Okay.
So that's why I like broke down to like a 12-minute mile.
Got it.
And even on the flat part, I was holding back because I was like, I'm tired from just running up and down this big ass hill, or I gotta reserve myself so I have enough energy to go up
the hill. Get up the hill, yeah.
If I just did something flat, I could do, I think, easily 10-minute mile. Like if I just did a flat marathon, something like that, I think I could easily average 6 miles an hour the whole way.
That'd be impressive.
Yeah. Which would be like a 4-hour marathon. I mean, I think the record is like a 2-hour, somewhere around there. Which is dumbass fast.
That's like sprint the whole time, man. That's impressive.
I can barely, I might be able to do like one lap around a track at that speed. And they're able to do that for 26 miles.
Yeah. Just talk about just super specialized training for years. That's how they get there.
Well, if you look at those people, they don't even look like they're running. They're just floating.
Gliding, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's just no energy wasted, anything like that.
And they weigh 110 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty small guys and girls. Well, that's cool, man. I'm really glad you did that.
Yeah, I mean, I loved it.
And I think you should keep going.
We'll see. I'm looking at the schedule now for California. And like May, there's a lot. June, there's a few. July, and then it like really just kind of, there's like not that much after July.
Okay.
So I think this is like the season to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's because of weather or what.
Are these all ultra specific or similar to one you had where it's like halves, marathons, and ultras all combined?
Most of them are combined.
Like, so everyone can just join.
Yeah, there's a couple of them where there's, like, it's just 100 miles. Like, that's the only race. If you're going to go there, you're doing this.
I think that'd be so cool if you did a 100-mile race. I mean, in years, you know what I'm saying? But eventually.
Well, I don't think it would be years. If I were to do it, I would do it this year.
Okay.
Because that means I'm going to, like, keep getting in shape and finding the time to do this.
Okay.
And
that's probably the hardest part, is getting in shape you can do in your sleep, but finding 8-hour blocks to train is hard.
Yeah, so this weekend, I'm driving my girlfriend. She's a makeup artist and like hair stylist. Something like that. So she works weddings. So she's doing one in Folsom. And so I'm going to drive her there, drop her off. Then I'm going to find some trail up there, run for 6 hours, and then pick her up and take her home.
Yeah.
So I'm like finding the time like that way.
Yeah, that sounds like torture to me, but sure.
So like, you know, like I just gotta find the time when I can.
Yeah.
Doing one day a week, super long runs. One day a week where I'm just doing like sprints. And then another day a week where I didn't do this last time, but I'm gonna do this time, is do some weight training with my legs.
Okay.
I think one thing like, with weight training, it'll definitely decrease my risk of injury, which would, you know, set me way back. I don't want to get in all this shape and then get injured and just lose all my endurance.
Yeah.
And then also, endurance or strength training is really similar to doing intervals.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost the same identical like type of training.
Yeah, if you go hard enough.
Yeah, so kind of balance those two out.
What are you going to do, like deadlift, squats, shit like that?
Definitely both of those. Mm-hmm. I just went to the gym and like did deadlifts and squats, and I was really like disappointed
weak.
With what, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just like I don't feel like I'm weak.
Uh-huh.
It's just like my muscles aren't used to it.
Yeah.
I was deadlifting 225. Last time I was deadlifting was about 400.
Mm-hmm.
And like my squat was like 185, and I was, I think at least at 300 last time.
Yeah. So yeah, it's funny. I recently had a conversation with somebody. You know, Sean Baker, obviously he's doing a 300 push-up challenge. So 300 push-ups a day for a month. Right. I was like, oh,
is that straight or?
No, broken up.
Okay.
So however you want to break it up. And yeah, no, I cannot do 300 push-ups straight. But I was like, oh, I can work in 300 push-ups in my workout routine, right? And workout's going fine, whatever. But doing 300 push-ups in between a workout, I was like, oh, that's way harder than I thought because I haven't done push-ups in a long-ass time. So it's not that I'm weak. It's not that I'm not in shape. But my body wasn't used to that type of load. Just like you weren't used to deadlifting. So it's not that, it's not like you're in worse shape now. You know what I mean? You just have to get back in that groove. So yeah, I just went through something pretty similar doing that. Was that all you had to say? I didn't want to cut off your story.
I think that's about it. I mean, like it's been so long, I could go into other stuff, but I think you just leave it at that.
Leave it at that. Yeah.
So what's new with you?
Well, yeah, I guess I can get into why we took the podcast off. So we talked about like the cancer podcast, maybe. God, it's been a while ago.
Like, I want to say that was one of our first like 5 or 10.
Yeah, because so, that obviously was important to both of us, because my dad had cancer and your dad currently has cancer. So my dad did pass, and yeah, so that happened, and that threw me off more than I thought it would. As weird as that sounds, because I am, if you listen to the podcast and you know me, you know I'm pretty, I don't know, robotic.
Yeah,
you clinical. Yeah, you know what I mean. Like I really am, and I know that about myself, but So I thought I kind of take everything in stride and be okay, but it really did throw me off my game for a little bit, and that happened a few weeks ago now, and I feel like I'm just getting back in the groove of things and getting back to a somewhat normal day-to-day life, and we had his like celebration of life just this past Saturday, so like 3 or 4 days ago, and that was nice. So yeah, I guess there's no need to go into it too much more than that, but that's what happened, that's why we had to put this on hiatus for a little bit, and but we're back now, back training, and oh, I guess I do want to talk about, so this whole time where he was sick, these last few weeks, obviously I was in the middle of like a summer cut, you know what I mean? Like I was really, as far as in my most like selfish mindset, it was the most inconvenient time for me, because I was eating my meals like at the same hours, the same thing, I was starving, and I was like, all right, how am I going to survive this stressful situation where I'm not at home, I'm not around my same foods, and still stay on track? So pretty much I threw the cut to the wind, and you'll remember me saying this. I've said this for years since we were a teenager. If you want to stick to a diet, what do?
You have to make it as convenient as possible.
Yeah, and you have to stay full. You can't let yourself get hungry, right? If you let yourself get hungry, it becomes a willpower game. And those games are just, you're going to lose that game eventually. And especially in a stressful situation I was in, I knew I was going to lose it. So I would go shopping. I would pack all my meals with me. I was staying at my parents and I was driving back and forth to my house like every other day. I bought heavy whipping cream, like jars of heavy whipping cream. Because I was just like, I'm just getting my calories through the roof. I'm still going to be carnivore. I'm still going to be zero carb, but I'm not going to diet, right? So I was thinking, what are the most like calorie dense shit I can eat? So I was drinking heavy whipping cream. I'm talking like a whole jar of heavy whipping cream.
I was thinking like, all right, you're not doing, as soon as you said zero carb, I was like, okay, so he's not doing coffee. Like, what the hell are you doing with this?
Yeah, no, I was just drinking it straight. And I was cooking maybe, I don't know, like 5 pounds of ground beef a day, drinking heavy whipping cream with that, eating eggs. I was going to In-N-Out and getting Flying Dutchman, like as many as I could eat. And the stressful situation, I was actually, looking back, like, stress eating. Like, I was eating a lot for me. You know what I mean? But I stayed on track. I didn't have anything. Like, I didn't, no ice cream, no cookies, no nothing like that. And you know all that food's around. When somebody does pass, like, that's what people do. They bring in, like, comfort food, you know?
Well, yeah, you want that sugar to get that dopamine hit.
Yeah, you get a little relief.
Yeah, it's a drug type of effect. It kind of helps out with that stress.
It does, yeah. So, but I stayed, you know, stick to my guns. Definitely put on a few pounds, 100%. But, you know, when you're eating like 10,000 calories, it's going to happen. You know what I mean? And I wasn't working out.
Well, I'm sure that increased cortisol had a lot to do with that too.
It didn't help. Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, I got through that. And yeah, now I'm just back to normal life, back to training. Diet's going really good. Been eating a lot of venison lately. And which is super lean meat. Damn, you're like, it's like the red version of chicken breast. It's super lean.
Where are you getting that from?
From the co-op.
Okay.
The co-op has everything. Yeah.
Okay. I haven't seen it in there.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So it has everything. So been doing that and was finally able to do research for this podcast last week. And I guess a little insider information. When I first like made the website, I'm not like a very technical savvy guy, but I knew like we needed content on the website, so I was like, what were some subjects I could really talk about confidently pretty much off the top of my head? So I wrote an article on cholesterol and why, you know, you shouldn't fear cholesterol and the history behind cholesterol is flawed, and just Ansel Keys is a dick pretty much. Wrote a whole paper on that. I wrote a paper on anti-nutrients and the dangers of vegetables and grains. Because obviously me being a zero-carb guy, I truly believe the anti-nutrients are worth cutting out of your diet. And I also wrote an article on vegetable oils and how why everyone should really get their fats from natural sources. Like, nature doesn't make bad fats. Humans do. And that's what industrial oils are. They're pretty much just human-created shitty fats that have been spinned and spun to make them seem like they're healthy by people with vested interest in selling them and vested interest in making us sick. So I wrote a whole paper on that. So I was able to just reread that pretty much and collect a lot of notes for this podcast. And it made it easier. But it did kind of reinvigorate my belief that vegetable oils are poison.
Yeah, you know, like, this is one of the first things that I kind of, like, learned about when I went, I guess, paleo years back and then finally transitioned to, like, keto, then more carnivore. So it's not something I even really have put that much research into lately. Because it's just, like, that's one of the first things you learn.
You just,
like,
believe it.
Oh, hey, these oils are shit. Don't consume them. Switch it out for coconut oil, butter, lard, something along those lines. Something natural. Something that actually is fatty in nature. Not some, like, tiny little seed. That's a waste product.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he says waste product. He genuinely means that. For years, these industrial seed oils were waste products.
Yeah, starting with, like, the cotton seed. So you either have fiber, that's what, like, you make the clothes out of, or the seed itself. And you produce, I think, more seed than you do fiber. So, like, when people were producing and, like, growing all that cotton all throughout, like, American history, you just have tons of seeds.
It's like, what do we do with all these damn seeds?
Well, they finally figured out, oh, yeah, we could get oil out of it. Mm-hmm. And that started really, like, in the 1850s is when they really had the technology to get the oil out of it. So they were using it to make soaps, candles, lubricant for machinery.
Hold on, so you're saying they didn't eat it?
No, why the hell would they eat something like that? It's not a food. Okay. Are you eating the t-shirt that you're wearing that's made out of cotton? No,
definitely not.
Cotton's not food.
Yeah.
We do that, like, forever.
Yes, we did.
It was a waste product. The reason it's a waste product is it is crazy high in omega-6 fatty acids. Those are pro-inflammatory.
Yeah. And actually, I want to do a quick list of all the industrial seed oils that are out there. They go by a million different names. So if you see soybean oil, canola oil, rapeseed oil, corn, cottonseed, sunflower, safflower, peanut, sesame, or rice bran, anything with these oils in it, that's what we're talking about. These very highly inflammatory oils. And just so, like, the five markers of inflammation, when you hear inflammation, people may not know what that is redness, swelling, heat, pain, and loss of function. So we talk about highly pro-inflammatory fats. These are the reactions that are happening inside our body when we consume these fats in these super high doses.
Yeah, we do. Inflammation is a normal activity of our body. Like, we do want inflammation. Like, if you get sick, you want a fever to happen. You know, if you get injured, you want it to swell up. You want that heat. Like, there are those things that you do want from inflammation. Do you want those every day, 24 hours a day, year round? Hell no, you don't. No, you do not need that much inflammation. You only need it in an acute setting, not a chronic setting.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's a key difference. So you also might hear, you know, omega-3s are good, omega-6s are bad. Like, what's the difference? So omega-3 fats are, like, anti-inflammatory. So our body can use those to produce pretty much hormones that tell our body anti-inflammatory system. But, like, that sentence made any fucking sense. Pretty much, like, what's the difference between omega-6 and omega-3? Omega-3s are anti-inflammatory, omega-6 are pro-inflammatory. And through history, we've been pretty much at, like, a 1-to-1 ratio of omega-6 to omega-3. So if you just eat pretty much like an animal-based diet, the ratio is going to be pretty similar. You know, it shouldn't be too much omega-3, too much omega-6. And the only thing with diets today is that they can have ratios as high as 20-to-1 omega-6 to omega-3. And that's a problem because both those fats get absorbed by the same receptors. So they kind of fight for the same receptors for absorption. So when you have so much omega-6 fats, I don't care what omega-3s you're eating, they're not getting into our cells because they're fighting with the omega-6, and it's just a number game. If you have 1,000 times more omega-6, of course they're going to outcompete the omega-3s.
So that means if you're taking a fish oil supplement and you're also cooking everything in canola oil, that fish supplement is just worthless?
It's worthless. Yeah, genuinely is worthless. And actually, yeah, doing research for this podcast, there's been multiple studies on the effectiveness and overall health of fish oil supplements. And one study claimed that after 30 days of an omega-3, the problem with omega fats is they're highly unstable. So after 30 days on the shelf, these omega-3 pills, I don't care how they're processed, they can be, you know, cold pressed, organic, pretty much like gently handled the entire lifetime. But after 30 days in a bottle, the predominant fat inside these pills had oxidized. And just after 30 days. Think when you buy a pill at whatever Safeway, how long was it on the shelf?
And then also, there's how many pills in there? Like, I'm not buying one thing for a 1 week supply. I'm buying
exactly
the jumbo size from GNC to last me the next 3 months.
Exactly.
Like that.
So even then, these people who are trying to improve their health, who hear that omega-3 fats are good, are buying these supplements, not really knowing that the oils they're taking are actually, they've gone bad and they have been oxidized and they're still taking it. And some, you mentioned this, sometimes they won't even be able to notice the difference.
Yeah, because they're not. They're flavored. They'll be like lemon flavor or something like that, so you don't taste the fish, or in this case, like the rotten fish.
Yeah, exactly.
So there are a couple things that you can do to like increase the shelf life of like fish oil. Is you can refrigerate it, which everybody should be doing. And then like also, if you are consuming some of these like omega-3 oils or omega-6 oils, something like either avocado oil or olive oil, something like that, you want to buy those in a glass bottle, a dark glass bottle, so sunlight can't be oxidizing that as well. And then also you can store those in the fridge too.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Like those are just a couple things to increase that shelf life. Because again, like if you're cooking with this oil, you're not going to taste that it's been, that it's rancid. Because you're going to be tasting the chicken that you're cooking in it. There's going to be all those other flavors along with it. So it's going to mask the flavor of this rancid oil.
Exactly. And actually, a point that I learned doing research for this podcast is, if you have, let's say you have a piece of salmon and you leave it on the counter for a week. If you come home, what's your house going to smell like?
I would not come home to that house. I would burn that shit to the ground.
Right,
it's going to be so bad.
So it's going to smell like rotten fish, right? You know what that is? That is the omega-3 fats in the fish oxidizing and producing these byproducts, right? That's what our senses, we know, like, viscerally, that's not good. Don't eat it, right?
Oh, yeah, that'd be the worst smelling thing ever.
Exactly, we know that. Guess what happens when an omega-6 fat oxidizes? We don't even have a sense for that. It doesn't taste bad to us. It doesn't smell bad to us. It's actually been shown that people kind of like the smell of oxidized omega-6 fats.
Where would people be getting those?
Exactly. That's the thing. Evolution only kind of propagates things that benefit us, right?
Yeah.
If we were exposed to so little omega-6 that our body didn't even feel the need to develop a kind of defense mechanism, like for our senses, that shows how little we actually got in our diet throughout our history. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Exactly. And that shows like the biggest change in the American diet over the 20th century has been the increase in seed oils, which has increased 1,000-fold. Because just think, from an evolutionary standpoint, where did we get them? Damn near nowhere, at least from that amount.
You'd be getting some from like almonds and like walnuts, mm-hmm. when they were in season for a very short period of time.
Yes.
And that would be like, you're getting some from eggs and meat sources. Mm-hmm. But again, like that ratio is basically even.
Exactly. Yeah, we were never getting, there was nowhere in history where there's a 21 ratio of omega-6 fats to omega-3 fats. It just does not exist in nature. Nowadays, some commercially raised meats, especially chicken, can be higher in omega-6 fats, but that's not natural. Like, we all know the way we're raising chickens nowadays is kind of messed up. But yeah, the biggest change is the increase in omega-6 fats.
Yeah, and before we move away from the ratio, if you want to check out your ratio to see how you're doing from that omega-3 to omega-6, you can go to chronometer.com or download the app, and that'll break down how many omega-6s you're getting from your foods and how many omega-3s. That's a great site to be able to just check to see how you're doing.
It is. Yeah, that's definitely a good resource. And yeah, actually looking into that, my wife loves chocolate, right? I guess as most people do. So I will buy her some really dark chocolate, some like 88-90% cacao dark chocolate bars. And there's not a lot of chocolate. It's predominantly fat. And I just looked into it and I was like, man, I wonder what the ratio is of omega-6 to omega-3s in dark chocolate.
I've never even looked.
Oh, it's like 20 to 1, 6 to 3. It's like crazy. And I was like, damn. Because the fat in, I mean, again, it's not like there's that much omega-6 and omega-3 in chocolate, but the ratio is all out of whack. And it makes sense. It's a processed food. It's a newly found food. It's not like we were processing chocolate 10,000 years ago.
True.
You know? So, but it was a little disappointing. Because dark chocolate does taste good and does fit, like, your macro lifestyle, you know?
Yeah.
So, But from an Omega 6 to Omega 3 standpoint, dark chocolate's trash. But I sure some people are not going to listen to me on that part.
It is a little disappointing, especially because most of the time when you're eating them, you're going to be eating them, at least the way I do it,
is like an almond.
Almond, which is, again, more Omega 6s mm-hmm. and 3s. I'll also do like walnuts, which I think have more 3s and 6s, but it's ALA.
It's ALA, yeah.
So it's not really.
Yeah.
Since we can barely convert ALA. Uh-huh.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, we talked about this in a previous podcast. Like ALA, like the plant form of omega-3s, you're converting like 5 to 10%, somewhere in that range. It's a very, very small amount mm-hmm. into EPA and DHA, which are the usable forms of omega-3s. So just because like walnuts and pecans have a lot of omega-3s, they don't really, because our body can't use them.
They don't really, exactly. Yeah. And you might hear the same argument for canola oil. That's kind of more on topic with this podcast as far as industrial seed oils. That's one of the hallmarks of canola being quote-unquote heart-healthy oil because it has high omega-3s. Not really, bitch. It's really high ALA. Yeah. And I don't care about that, and you shouldn't either. So just be more informed, and now you are. And it's just, I was thinking more about what people should cut out of their diets, right? A lot of people, diets are kind of, they're not on point, right? They're eating what they want to eat when they want to eat it. So just recently, actually, my sister came to me and she wanted to talk to me about lectins. I think I told you about this, right?
I think so.
I don't know. So
it's been a while since we've seen each other.
Yeah, that's true. But so she wanted, what foods are high in lectins? What foods should I cut out? And I was just like, yeah, I don't think people should be eating lectins 24/7, 365, but there are other things you need to worry about. Like, lectins should be kind of farther down your list. And I really think if you're trying to clean up your diet, what you need to do first is get rid of industrial seed oils. I think even over sugar. Like, at least sugar is somewhat natural, right? Every baby is exposed to sugar right away, right? And lactose and breast milk. Like, we're used to sugar. We have systems in our body designed to use sugar. Now, do we misuse them and it's like the normal, like, industrial revolution did kind of like just screw up the amount of sugar humans get? Yeah, it sure did. But at least our body knows what to do with sugar. Our body does not know what to do with industrial seed oils. So I think people need to, if you're going to clean up your diet, this is what you need to eliminate first.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. This is definitely like the lowest hanging fruit.
It is.
That's why we're starting our series with this one.
Yes.
It's like if you have this stuff, for one, like, one of the trends you're going to see is, like, the five worst foods are all hella cheap. They're, like, the cheapest stuff in the grocery store. The reason that they're cheap is because they're not supposed to be food.
No, you've been sold a lie.
Yeah, like, if you, when we get to the five best foods, you're going to realize those are a little, those kind of cost more. It's because, hey, the foods that were healthiest were made for a king. The food that were just like, hey, we can mass produce these, they're cheap, they're not really food, those are for everybody else. Those are for the peasants.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I always say that, I know it's not politically correct, but I say this type of food is slave food. Like, this is not designed for everybody. It's not. This is not good food for us. And, yeah, talking about cutting things out, like, trans fat are bad.
I think everybody knows that. Are they banned from our country or supposed to be?
Yeah, I know they're banned in Europe. I think they're pretty much banned nowadays, yeah. I think fairly recently, the law was passed. Like, you can't use them in restaurants and stuff like that. But, like, people know that. People know, like, oh, I know trans fat in my diet. Trans fat's not good for you. But people are using these oils. They're using canola oil. They're using soy oil or maybe rice oil. At best, I don't care how you process. Like, this is for canola oil, like, example. You can do cold press, organic. At best, there's going to be 5% trans fat inside that oil. 5%. That's crazy high. And I'm talking that's the best. Now, the oil you're getting that's been on a shelf that's sitting in a clear plastic bottle is going to be high. 10, 15, 20% trans fat. And that's not good. And you wonder why that's good, why that's not good. Our bond, what trans means is pretty much the position of hydrogens associated with a carbon-carbon bond. So trans just means they're on the opposite sides of the carbon. Cis, which is the other side of bond, is the hydrogens are on the same side of the carbon. Our enzymes, our whole enzymatic system is really designed to handle cis bonds. So what happens when these trans fats get into our system, they kind of bind to these enzymes like a lock and key and they don't let go. So they sit inside our cell membranes and they don't let the cell function properly. And eventually when more and more of these trans fats bind, they'll just eventually lead to cell death because the cell will not be able to function properly. And that's a problem. And there are some trans fats that occur. Well, there's one trans fat that occurs naturally. And it's a trans fat you'll find sometimes in dairy and in beef. But it's a trans fat that occurs on the 11th carbon on a hydrocarbon chain in a fat. So if that happens, if the trans bond happens on the 11th carbon, our body has an enzyme that turns that fat into CLA, which is conjugated linoleic acid, which is perfectly healthy, perfectly fine, and is actually a benefit. So the one trans fat our body has seen over millions of years, our body developed an enzyme to deal with it. Makes sense. But when we hydrogenate these oils, which happens with canola oil, soy oil, all that stuff, we get trans bonds on all the carbons. So I'm talking 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th. All these carbons have trans bonds now, and our system is not designed to work with trans fats.
So basically what he's trying to say in normal people terms is that it's a fat molecule that looks a little bit different. And since it looks different, our body doesn't recognize it. So it's just taking up space and making those cells useless because it doesn't recognize them. It has no idea what to do with them.
Exactly. It's like, what is this? I've never seen this before, because these fats do not occur in nature. Nothing about these fats are natural. And I looked into a little bit the data of how much omega-6 people are eating, and it's crazy. So country-specific omega-6 consumption ranged from 1.2% to 12.5% of total energy, and the global mean was 5.9%. That's all the calories of a day. That's crazy.
So I'm guessing those 12.5 countries are us, Australia.
Yes, Western industrialized countries. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, so the Western world was closer to the 8% of total energy intake. And they've done studies like, all right, so what happens when your total energy input, like a lot of that percentage comes from omega-6 fats? And they've done like rates of cancer, like, you know, what happens when you eat this much omega-6 fats? And after you go from 0 to 4%, you know, total energy, the line is like just a really sharp, goes all the way up. The more omega-6 you eat, the higher your rates of cancer. It's pretty much 1 to 1. It's crazy. But at 4%, it tops off. It's like maxed out 100%. And we're chilling at close to 8 to 10% in America. So we're topped out. Like, our body is fully, like, you want to blame cancer, you want to blame diabetes, you want to blame obesity on something. These industrial seed oils are definitely contributing to those diseases.
Yeah, like we mentioned earlier, it's that ratio omega-6 to omega-3s that really matters. So if we increase our consumption by 10 times the amount, that means that ratio is also way out of whack. So that means we're staying in a pro-inflammatory state damn near all the time.
Yeah, damn near all the time. And I guess we didn't mention it earlier, but most of these diseases of Western civilizations are diseases of chronic inflammation. So think cancer, think diabetes, think heart disease. These are all diseases of chronic inflammation, so they can be tied back to industrial seed oils and the increase in the omega-6 linoleic acid. And you might be wondering why, like, what makes omega-6 so inflammatory? What's so different about them? And the thing is, omega-6 fats and even omega-3 fats as well, they're not normally used for fuel. They're used as almost like signaling molecules because they're very reactive. So our body takes these fats and uses them to create something called a prostaglandin, and that's a locally produced hormone. So think like somebody, I don't know, hits your leg with a bat. It's going to be inflamed, it's going to be swollen, it's going to be red. And inside that specific area, your body's going to use omega-6 fats to produce prostaglandins that are pro-inflammatory, so your body can actually heal from that wound. So yeah, a common example for a pro-inflammatory response would be to convert linoleic acid, which is a prime omega-6 fat, into a prostaglandin that leads to vasodilation, which increases blood flow. And then the increased blood flow can contribute to redness, heat, and swelling, which again are the markers of inflammation. So that's really what these omega-6 fats and omega-3 fats are designed to do. They're not supposed to be a huge part of our diets. They're supposed to be designed to make prostaglandins that our body can use to actually signal what to do with these signals. The major problem with this is that since they're designed to be used as prostaglandins, this themselves, these omega-6 fats, are very highly unstable. So they're prone to oxidation. And you're going to hear that word oxidation a lot. When you hear oxidation, just think something going rancid. Think something going bad. That's what we mean when we say oxidation. And so when that happens, when an omega-6 fat like linoleic acid is oxidized, it produces harmful toxins. And collectively, they're called oxidized linoleic acid metabolites, which also induce inflammation. These are produced from heating the oils as well as like outside our body and inside our body. Just having these oils exposed to stomach acid. So say you get, again, the best industrial seed oil you can buy. Once it hits our stomach acid, these oxidized linoleic acid metabolites will be produced in our own stomach. So it happens inside the body and outside the body. So the big three for these oxidized linoleic acid metabolites are acrolein, HNE, and MDA. And I'm going to read a few things, like a few of the characteristics of these molecules, and you're going to be shocked that these are actually allowed in food, allowed to cook with, allowed all that stuff. So acrolein, this is an acute toxin found in cigarette smoke. Let that sit in. That's a biocide, meaning it's toxic to all life.
So wait, even if I don't smoke cigarettes, I can get lung cancer from this?
Yes, 1,000%. 1,000%. And I made that statement before, like cooking with this stuff, like say you're cooking with soybean oil in your kitchen, and you know, after a while that oil will start to smoke, you might as well be smoking a cigarette. And a biocide, like think of, what is it, like a pictogram, where it's like visual symbols of something? Think of like a skull and crossbone. I'm talking, go outside, put it on your weeds. What happens to your weeds? Dead. Go put it on a worm outside. What happens to the worm? Dead. And it happens to us. It's a biocide. That means it's toxic to everything. So that's a major one, biocide. Another one is HNE. I would pronounce it, but it's super hard to pronounce, and I've only read it, so I never actually have to say it out loud. But this one's only produced from omega-6 fats. And so it's a good marker to track omega-6 damage because it's like very, it's only produced by these type of fats. So it's cytotoxic, meaning it kills living cells. It's mutagenic, meaning it induces mutations in DNA. It's genotoxic, meaning it destroys DNA. And I'm talking both DNA from our mitochondria and our nucleus. The other one, MDA, again, cytotoxic, mutagenic, genotoxic, destroying everything.
So wait, so this would just cause cancer in anything if it's if it's mutating the DNA and then also damaging the mitochondria?
Yes.
That sounds like the best recipe possible for cancer.
Yes, it does. Because we've talked about this a million times. This is a conclusion we both come to over just, I guess, the years we've been doing this now. We have to keep our mitochondria healthy. When our mitochondria goes to shit, everything goes to shit. It just really does. Just saying, yeah, how bad are they really? So cooking with seed oils is the leading cause of lung cancer in non-smoking women in China. Let that sit in. That's a real thing. And I'm going to provide links on the website so you can look up these studies. And I really think about this every time. So I go to In-N-Out on like my refeed days, my real high calorie days, and I usually get Flying Dutchman, which is just meat and cheese. And I genuinely feel bad for the workers inside In-N-Out because you know what type of oil they use in In-N-Out?
Is it peanut or something like that?
Soy. Oh. And they say on their bag, like that, like a badge of honor, like we use heart healthy soy oil. And I'm like, oh man, these people are sick. And they come, they, you know, they hand me the food through the window and their face is all glistening from this oil. Their hands are kind of sticky from this oil. And I'm like, you don't understand. You're pretty much just sitting in cigarette smoke 24/7, 365.
Damn, that's really bad.
And they don't even know.
Yeah, I mean, that's so much secondhand smoke.
That's so much secondhand
smoke. Basically.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. And I don't know, man. I really hope, like, the fast food industry and just the restaurant industry as a whole used to use animal-based fats. They used to use beef tallow, like I know McDonald's did. But once the saturated fat kind of dogma set in that we can't use it as bad for us, that's going to give us a heart attack, all of these industries use industrial seed oils now. And I don't know, man. I hope there has to be some, like, class action lawsuit. There has to be. In, like, 20, 30 years, like, these people are going to start getting these diseases. They're going to be like, what are you talking about? I'm like Mr. Health.
So you know how we just talked about, I don't know if it was the last podcast or a couple podcasts ago, about glyphosate and how that's causing cancer. So I was watching TV the other day, and a commercial came on about lawyers promoting, they're doing a class action lawsuit for anybody that's used glyphosate or Roundup and has gotten non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Good. So there's a class action lawsuit going on. This just happened in the news not that long ago. Our government, the EPA, just decided that glyphosate is safe.
Oh, God. So,
like, they are doubling down on glyphosate being safe.
That's so upsetting. I should know that, though.
Yeah. So, even though, like, hey, this court, this one man won over $250 million, that's a billion with a B. Yeah, no, it's still safe to use.
We know it's not safe. Yeah. I mean, man, that's so upsetting. But it makes sense, man. Money talks.
Yeah.
Money talks. It really does. And now Bayer is the people behind Roundup. What do they have?
Oh, they got all the money that they could possibly need.
They really do. Man, that's upsetting.
I know, it's crazy. I was like, oh yes, there's a class action lawsuit. This shit's gonna be gone. Mm-hmm. Nope, no it's not.
It's here's a stamp of approval.
Yeah.
Man, that sucks. That really does. Thanks for the downer. That's great.
Sorry.
But yeah, I don't know. Well, I hope that happens with something, with these industries that use soy oil, and these poor kids, man, are sitting there cooking these meat and these fries. Well, not the meat, but I guess they fry fries in soy oil. And yeah, man, that's just upsetting to me. I really feel bad for them. And to go a little bit more into diseases that industrial seed oils are linked to, I went into cancer and heart disease, really, because those are the three big ones. But they also have been linked to autoimmune diseases, diabetes, even things like autism have been linked to these omega-6 fats. But I've added research on all this shit. It would take me a month. But I did look into cancer. So what really happens is the dietary fat we eat over time will make up the fat in our cells. So we eat a bunch of saturated fat like I do, like you do. Our cells are going to be predominantly made of saturated fat, which is a good thing. It's very chemically stable. The problem with omega-6 fats is they easily oxidize into toxic substances. So when they oxidize, they release more reactive oxygen species on top of these toxic lipid radicals. So it's kind of like a double whammy. Every time it's oxidized, it produces these like HNE, MOA, or acrolein, these like really harmful byproducts. But it also releases reactive oxygen species that kind of propagate the whole reaction. They just kind of just continue the whole reaction. So remember what the trigger for apoptosis was in a mitochondria? It was excessive reactive oxygen species. And so this can lead to mitochondrial dysfunction. And somebody we both, I don't know if we admire him, but we respect him, Thomas Seyfried. You know, he's come up in all the cancer talks. He's kind of like he's a stud cancer guy.
Yeah, he studied genetics. So he was trying to find a cure for cancer through the genetic model, stumbled across the metabolic approach. And then he's like, why didn't I learn about this earlier? This makes so much sense. And since he has a background in genetics, he's like the perfect person to realize, hey, this theory is bullshit. This theory is right. Exactly. So if he says something about cancer, he knows both theories inside and out. He's the shit. Like, he knows so much about this.
He does. Yeah, whatever he says, listen to him. So a diet high in linoleic acid leads to a change in cardiolipin, which is a molecule in the mitochondria. So Thomas Seyfried, who has contributed much to the field of cancer metabolism, notes that dysfunctional cardiolipin has always been observed in cancer cells. This always happens. And this is closely tied to increases in linoleic acid. So HNE, which is one of those byproducts of omega-6 oxidation, it damages pyruvate dehydrogenase, which is the enzyme that allows the products of glycolysis, which is pyruvate, to enter the mitochondria to be converted into acetyl-CoA, which further inhibits mitochondrial function. Just think, what is our mitochondria going to do if it can't get acetyl-CoA? It can't actually use like the Krebs cycle. What's it going to rely on?
It can't use anything. It's worthless.
Just glycolysis, right? It can't use the mitochondria, so we're just going to use glycolysis. What do cancer cells love to do?
You mean fermentation?
Yeah. No, well, glycolysis. Do that what I mean?
You mean fermentation? Doesn't glycolysis happen inside the mitochondria?
No. Glycolysis happens in the cytosol. And then it produces pyruvate, and pyruvate goes into the mitochondria.
Okay.
And then that gets converted into acetyl-CoA, and that gets ran through the citric acid cycle.
Isn't the citric acid cycle glycolysis?
No, glycolysis is what produces
pyruvate. I'm thinking of the Krebs cycle.
You're thinking of the Krebs cycle. Yeah. Now, as you mind, this is our first podcast back in a month. Everything's a little rusty, but that's what happens. So our body's going to rely on just producing glucose. It's not going to use the mitochondria if it can't get fuel into the mitochondria. So it leads to mitochondrial dysfunction. And as we've talked about a million times, when our mitochondria go, everything goes. So this is how high diets in linoleic acid can lead to cancer. And another one that was big that I looked into was heart disease. And we've talked about heart disease before. Like, what's the metaphor with aliens?
So when you have heart disease, generally you're going to have high cholesterol. So if you were an alien and you were just looking down on Earth, if you saw a car accident, what would you also see?
Ambulance.
Ambulance. So just naturally, hey, every time there's a car accident, there's an ambulance. So if we take out these ambulances, there'll be no more car accidents. And that's what we're pretty much doing when we have that cholesterol with heart disease. It's, hey, every time there's heart disease, there's cholesterol. Well, it's because that you have heart disease that the cholesterol is present. It's not that the cholesterol is causing it, it's an effect.
Exactly. Yeah, they're looking at it backwards. And that's something we've had to, we're still fighting that fight. Like, that's not what he just said. Like, you can go talk to a cardiologist right now and they wouldn't know that. That's sad.
He would say, you're lying, and give you a prescription for a statin drug.
Yes, he would. He's like, here, take this Lipitor and have ED for the rest of your life.
Yeah, because the reason that you have heart disease is because you don't have enough statins in your life.
Yeah, we're all statin deficient. If you didn't know, they're going to put statins in our drinking water. But yeah, to go to a little bit between the mechanism of heart disease, so increase omega-6 fats from the diet, increase endothelium permeability. So oxidized LDL and foam cell formation, those are all parts of like heart disease, what that happens, or what needs to happen for heart disease to really occur. So this all leads to the buildup of plaque. So I didn't know a lot about endothelial permeability, so I had to look into it a little bit. So the signal to increase cell permeability doesn't occur with saturated fats. Because saturated fat is used for structural support and fuel, it's not used for the creation of prostaglandins like omega-6 are. So we have the endothelial cells. These are cells that line our blood vessels. So think arteries, arterioles, capillaries, venules, and veins. Pretty much everywhere blood is, these are the cells that line those vessels. And they have receptors for inflammatory mediators. So when these mediators, also known as prostaglandins, bind to these endothelial cells, they contract, which creates spaces between the cells, between the tight junctions, increasing vascular permeability. So they pretty much let fluid pass them. And this happens when they have kind of like, our body just needs to get shit out of the blood. It'll decrease the, or increase the size in between these cells, allowing fluid to get past them. So removal of particles causing inflammation, like oxidized LDL, the body wants to get it out of the blood. It's not like a good thing. That's something that probably I should talk about a little bit more. LDL is, I guess someone would say, a lot of people would say that's bad cholesterol. You would hear that, right?
Well, there's different types of LDL. But yeah, generally, like that's the one of the normal signs that you look for when you're looking at high cholesterol.
Yeah, so a lot of people will say LDL is bad cholesterol, HDL is good cholesterol. And that's not, poor cholesterol is not true. LDL is a lipoprotein, so it's just a carrier of cholesterol. It's a carrier of triglycerides and other like fatty molecules like vitamin A or vitamin E. They're actually in these lipoproteins. So all lipoproteins start from like VLDL, these like big lipoproteins. And as they go through our body, they kind of dump their materials to cells that need it. So cells like a heart cell needs triglycerides. It goes there, gives it some triglycerides for fuel. And then it turns into an LDL. Then over time, which is a low-density lipoprotein, after it dumps more and more of its stuff through the body, it'll turn into HDL, which is a high-density lipoprotein. But it's still, it's the same lipoprotein, it's just a different size. And over time, once it gets to HDL, it goes back to the liver to get recycled and kind of refilled up with either cholesterol or, like I said, vitamins and minerals, triglycerides that our body needs for fuel, and then gets sent back out to the body. But what happens when we have oxidized LDL is the receptor, something called ApoB, which the liver uses, like, okay, this is LDL, take it up, gets damaged. So now the liver doesn't recognize oxidized LDL. And that's how LDL can get elevated in our blood supply, because the liver doesn't recognize it, so it just kicks it out. It just keeps going. So now there's more LDL in our blood. And so our body sees this oxidized LDL as like a pro-inflammatory marker. It has to get it out of the blood. And that's when it increases cell permeability and gets it into that endothelial lining, which is what's going to create plaque. So I looked into like what's a major component of oxidized LDL? Why does LDL oxidize?
So with LDL, you've also probably heard of it as there's two types, the big fluffy kind and the small like dense kind, also known as LDLA. That would be like the big fluffy ones. Those are the healthy LDL. And then there's a LDLB, which are the small oxidized form. So the LDLA, which is just like another name for just LDL, is the healthy ones that we want. The LDLB is like the smaller, they're like, people compare them to like BBs. They're like the small, dense kind. And those are the ones that have already been oxidized and our body no longer recognizes those.
Exactly. And so, and what's a major driver for oxidized LDL? It's an increase in linoleic acid. So it was discovered that oxidation of LDL was initiated by the oxidation of linoleic acid contained within the LDL particles. That's a huge thing. Like, they've done studies on what actual fat is in these LDL particles causing oxidation. It is linoleic acid because it's so unstable. So LDL mainly composed of saturated fatty acids or monounsaturated fatty acids. Again, think of fats from animal sources. That's what you're going to get, or olive oil. They are very resilient to oxidation, but LDL composed of linoleic acid oxidizes very easily. So linoleic acid is the most abundant fat found in atherosclerotic plaques. And I think that should be like mic drop. That's a big thing. You know what I mean?
So that's the number one cause of the number one disease that kills people in our country.
That's it. Boom. That should be like done. Like, go tell your heart surgeon that. Go tell them this is what's going on, man. Sometimes if you go to your doctor and they say, oh, just keep doing what you're doing, you know, good luck next time, take this pill. If they don't tell you to address any sort of dietary change, man, they don't know what they're talking about.
Well, even the differences in LDL that we just talked about, I don't even think most cardiologists are even aware of that information or even like hip to it.
And that's sad.
Because like you're not always, you're generally just doing a total cholesterol test. What's your total cholesterol? What's your HDL? What's your LDL? Not what's your particle size of your LDL.
That's true.
Where's your triglycerides to your HDL? Like, that's stuff that doesn't really go over. And those are way better biomarkers.
Oh, way better than total cholesterol. Mark, yeah, total cholesterol, who cares? Yeah, exactly. It's really the ratios and then the size of the LDL particles themselves. Okay, so now you've ate a bunch of linoleic acid. You know, you're just swimming in omega-6 fats. You have oxidized LDL. It's stored in the endothelial layer of our arteries. Now this is recognized by our white blood cells and macrophages, and they bind to it to break it down into the components parts for recycling or excretion. That's what our white, that's what our immune system is designed to do. It's kind of help us out. So this process over time leads to foam cell formation and plaque buildup. Oxidized linoleic acid metabolites, H&E, MDA, are also recognized by our white blood cells, further increasing recruitment of our immune system to promote the creation of plaque. So that's what you need. There's three steps needed for plaque to build up. You need damage to endothelial layer, supply to create the plaque, and then an immune response for creation of foam cells. And all of these are accomplished by linoleic acid and its harmful byproducts. So there you go. Your healthy canola oil, your healthy soy oil is leading to heart disease.
So if it's marked as a heart-healthy oil, throw that shit away, avoid it, because it's doing the complete opposite.
Complete opposite, yeah. And I also wrote this little side note here, which I think is just the funniest thing, or the craziest thing. We both talked about how they probably could never do a study on me or you, like saying, like, what happens if you just eat meat? Because they would deem it, like, non-ethical.
Oh, exactly.
Right? They wouldn't pass a board. Well, I read a study where people were just fed margarines with varying degrees of ALA, which is alpha-linolenic acid, which is omega-3 fat that we talked about earlier that sucks, and linoleic acid, omega-6 fats. So that's what they were fed. They were fed margarine as their main fat source for like 6 weeks. Now that's fine. Eat margarine every day for 6 weeks. But you can't test me eating steaks every day?
That's the heart-healthy fat, though.
Blew my mind. Yeah. I was like, are you serious? Like, that shouldn't be allowed. And the people, everyone sucked on this little study. Obviously, the people with more omega-6 did worse. But that doesn't mean the ALA was good. You know, it was upsetting. It really was.
Honestly, getting me to convert from, like, the industrial seed oils that I always thought were healthy to, like, actual healthy fats like butter, coconut oil, mostly just saturated fats because they'll cook. Those are, like, heat stable. That was the easiest convincing out of anything, just because I was like, wait, what do they have to do to this oil to, like, make it an oil? They have to do all these steps? Oh, yeah, there's no way people, even 200 years ago, were doing this shit.
Because they didn't have the machinery.
They didn't have the technology. Like, they physically couldn't do it. So this is like a brand new, like, food item. So it's like, okay, yeah, of course we're not designed to do this. Mm-hmm. These other fat sources that have been around for thousands, hundreds of thousands of years, mm-hmm. the ones that are, like, marked as unhealthy, if those were unhealthy, we would have died off fucking 100,000 years ago.
Yeah, as monkeys. Yeah, it never would have worked out.
Yeah, it's just kind of crazy. Like, that was the easiest convincing it took me, is just because, like, you just think about it of just some common sense.
It is just common sense. Yeah, just think about it a little bit. Stop being, like, spoon-fed information and be a critical thinker. Like, the problem with these fats is they oxidize so easily. They oxidize outside our body, they oxidize inside our body, and they produce these harmful byproducts that our body has to deal with. And these are new byproducts, and it's not like these byproducts are, like, oh, they're kind of bad. No, they're really bad for us. And they're leading, just look up. Look around at your friends. Look around at your coworkers. People are overweight. People are sad. People are depressed. People are angry. All these things can be tied back to mental and physical health from an increase in these linoleic acids. So, I don't know, man. I think it's a huge problem. And I think Like, mayonnaise is a big one. Like, mayonnaise is usually a soy oil. Buy avocado oil mayonnaise. Don't eat it, man. Just cut it out your diet. There's no need to have these foods in your house.
And one of the worst things is, like, people think that salads are, like, the healthiest thing on the planet. Good luck trying to find a salad dressing that does not have canola oil or soybean oil.
Good luck.
Like, even the ones that say olive oil, they're an olive oil-soybean oil blend. Like, there's only one brand I know that's not using those, and that's Primal Kitchen. But yep. They just got bought by, is it Kraft?
Yeah, it is Kraft.
So I'm not sure how much longer that's going to be true.
I hope it stays the same. But yeah, you never know. And that's so funny, man. When people, I think as wrongly as it is, as naive as it is, to eat salads to lose weight, they use, like, they target that audience, and they use heart-healthy oils in their salad dressings. And it's just like, man, that can't be further from the truth. That's so bad for you.
Yeah, so even the people that are trying to be good, that are going out of their way, putting in an effort,
yeah,
they're still putting this poison in their bodies at an alarming rate. Like, who isn't using a ton of salad dressing to make that shitty lettuce palatable?
Yes, and your, like, bitter-ass kale or your shitty spinach, right? No one likes that stuff. We're not rabbits, so I don't know, man. It's just, it sucks. And just going through this whole podcast now and going through these notes, like, it's so bad for you. If you're going to do anything, just cut out industrial seed oils. Like, please do it. You don't need it. And that's the one thing, like, I am this person. I go to family members' house and I'll go through cupboards. And if you have a little sugar in your house, you have some chocolate, whatever, I usually leave that alone. Because like I said earlier, at least our body knows what to do with sugar. But if you have some dressing in your house that's full of soy oil, or you have mayonnaise that's made from soy oil, I throw it away.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the lowest hanging fruit. And if you have that as your cooking oil, that means you're consuming it with damn near every single meal. And that's what you're using to cook with. Every time you cook a meal, you're consuming it. So, like, you're constantly consuming it. Even if you're consuming a lot of sugar, chances are you're not consuming sugar with every single meal, or at least a shit ton of it with every single meal. So, like, this is by far the first one to tackle.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, this just reminds me of one of the benefits of these oils, if there is any, is that they're really cheap, right?
Oh, they're dumbass cheap.
You can get gallons of it for a dollar, right? Yeah. Dirt cheap, right? And I get it. I had one of our clients, you weren't there, so I don't think you know this, but obviously didn't know much about industrial seed oils, right? She was talking to me about, I think it was a margarine spread. Oh, I only use that for my kids. I don't use that for me anymore. I use butter now. I was like, what? She goes, yeah, they don't know the difference. And I was like, you can't be serious. You're feeding your kids poison. Like, yeah, but it's expensive to eat all this butter. That's scary. That's how they get you, man. These people are strapped for cash, and they can get a whole tub of margarine for a dollar or a stick of butter for four. You know what I'm saying? That sucks.
Yeah, I do recognize that. But you know what you could do? Coconut oil.
It's cheap.
It's really cheap. There's I think it was Big Lots. I was getting like a protein like container size one for like $10. And that will last me months. And then at that time, I was adding it to my coffee. I was adding it to every single meal. Mm-hmm. Like, I was consuming that at such a high rate. Like, I don't use that for anything anymore. But, like, you can still buy a shit ton of it for, like, $10. It's maybe a little bit more money than some canola oil, but it's way healthier.
Way healthier, yeah. So, yeah, you have anything else to say?
Just don't even if you have some of that stuff laying around, you have some canola oil, don't wait to run out of it to go buy more. Just throw that shit in the trash. You're only wasting some pocket change. You're not even wasting like real dollars, and go buy yourself some real like healthy fats.
Exactly. And I would argue you've already wasted your money buying it, so throw it away. Do you have a tip of the week this week?
Yeah, I wrote this article a few weeks ago. That was before I knew we were going to take this little break, but this just fits in with that ultra marathon that I just ran, and the name of this one is called Make Your Past Self Jealous. So, hey, living a healthy lifestyle can get a little tedious at times, you know, trying to eat healthy day after day after day, going to the gym every single day. You know, it can get a little bit difficult, but it can get a little bit boring. So one thing you can do to change that is create some sort of challenge for yourself. That way you have a goal that you're working towards. And then not only do you have to create that challenge, but write it down and place it somewhere that you're going to see it every single day. So you're reminded of that challenge that you have coming up. So it can be anything from like running a marathon like I just did, or maybe you're trying to do some like crazy new yoga pose, or maybe you're trying to deadlift like 500 pounds. It doesn't really matter what it is, as long as it's something that you want to work towards doing. So you put that goal, put it up on your fridge, put it somewhere you're going to see it every single day. And then you can just, every single time you look at it, you're just going to be reminded, hey, I got to work towards this goal. over and over again. And you want to create something that you can do in a short period of time. Something like 3 to 6 months is a pretty good timeline. If you create a goal that's going to take you 2 years to achieve, you know, it's easy to get sidetracked. And if you create a goal that's something that you can achieve in a week, that means you created a goal that's way too easy, way too obtainable. So a good 3 to 6 months is a good window. And maybe you want to run a marathon, but hey, you're out of shape and you're not going to be able to do that. So once you set your first goal to run a 5K, then run a 10K, something along those lines. And then, you know, another 3 months later, half marathon, then finally up to a marathon. You don't have to break it up into, I want to do this crazy goal, but it's going to take me a year to achieve. Break it up into 3 little months. And, you know, having a challenge like gives you that extra motivation to go to the gym when it's raining and you don't want to go. Or, hey, there's donuts sitting in the break room. It gives you that extra little bit of willpower. It's like, nope, I can't eat that. I got this challenge coming up. So it just gives you that extra willpower, that extra motivation to, you know, take it to the next step. Keep that training going. Keep that nutrition dialed in. Make sure, you know, you're staying on that nice, healthy, right track.
Boom. That's a good tip, man. It really is. Because that's what a lot of people struggle with, is keeping that motivation high and staying on point for the long haul. It's hard for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, if your goal is, hey, I want to live to be 100, but you're 30 years old, you know, it's really hard to, like, stay motivated about something that's going to take 70 years to achieve.
Very true.
So you need those little baby steps, something to keep you occupied from time to time.
Yep. All right, well, that's another podcast in the books. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. So feel free to reach out if you have any questions, comments, or concerns.
Yeah, and please rate and subscribe. That's how new people can come and find us. We read all our reviews, so it's a good way to get into contact with us. Also, check out our meal plans, either for yourself or, you know, if you know anybody that's trying to get into a little bit of better shape, live a healthy lifestyle. Everything's on our website, TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.